Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, and welcome to a very special episode. Before we kick into it, you've already read the title. You know who the guest is. I'm not going to say it here in case you just download the episodes and jump into it, and you don't look at the title. I don't want to ruin it, but you probably already know what it is, so let's just be honest. But before I get into that, a couple of things. The first one, and why this is so exciting, is this is episode 400, kind of a milestone. You know, 500 is a nice one, but every 100 is amazing. 400 episodes in under 2 years with some breaks, 5 days a week, such great content, so many awesome guests. I truly love the people who I've attracted into my life and had on the show, and all of the conversations ranging from people you might have heard of before to people you've never heard of before, but have great perspectives, interesting views, lots of experience, lots of value helping the sales and marketing community. So I've loved every single one of them. And I have a special project that I'm going to do with the guest episodes I've been doing, which goes into the next piece of news. Just so you know, if you're hearing this, this is going to be the last episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show in season 4. So I'm not stopping the show completely. I'm going to take another one of my breaks. I've done this a couple of times. This is season 4. And I thought, okay, episode 400, especially with this guest, it's a great way to finish, take a break, step back, working on some other projects. I have a lot of stuff going on. If you want to see what I have going on, whether you're in sales, sales leadership, go to jasoncutter.com. It's the best place to go. I have workshops. I'm starting masterminds. I have the consulting side. We have obviously the podcast episode. I have the book, so I have Selling with Authentic Persuasion. Plus, I'm working on more of the A Sales Consultant's Guide to series, so make sure to check those out. There's also for Selling with Authentic Persuasion, the audio version is out there. So much is going on. Go to jasoncutter.com where you can find all of that that I am working on. You can find all those. So I'm going to end after this episode. I'm going to end season 4, take a break. Not sure how long that's going to be. I'm going to retool things. I love taking a break because then I come back with some new ideas, get fired up, and then, you know, just come out swinging for a new thing. And it's one of those things that a lot of people don't do enough of in their life. If you remember as a kid getting summers off and taking that break, and as an adult, we don't. And so sometimes it's good to have that off season like professional athletes do. So I like to do that with the podcast, come back fresh and don't feel like I have to do this. So that's the other piece. And then lastly, as you know, this episode, this is huge. And this is really a testament. We're going to talk about it in the episode. And it's the focus of his book, which I basically leveraged the principles of that and made this happen. But on this episode is Mark Victor Hansen. He joined me. I feel like this is an amazing person to have on the show, somebody who I couldn't have imagined talking to and or even having on the podcast. And I heard him on another podcast on Sam Crowley's show, the Every Day is Saturday show. If you haven't checked that one out, make sure to check that out. I reached out to Sam and said, how did you do that? And he said, here, talk to this person. I asked. I made it happen. So as you're listening to this episode, a couple of things. He drops so much value. It's so amazing. I can't say enough. And I'm going to try to cut this intro shorter. It's going to make it a super long episode. But there's so much stuff that he talks about. Make sure to get his book, Ask. That's what it's all about, is asking for what you want and why you don't. Salespeople, business leaders, solopreneurs, anybody out there, like, what's in the way of you asking? How do you do it? I've read through the book. It's so much value. There's so many great tips. Plus, Mark Victor Hansen, he's world famous. I mean, he's written 312 books and sold over 500 million, and his goal is to be the first person to sell a billion books. And he was here on the Authentic Persuasion Show, finishing out season 4, episode 400. So here we go. Let's jump into it. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another guest episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. I have a very, very special guest with me today. You might be familiar with him. His name is Mark Victor Hansen, and he is widely known as an American motivational speaker, trainer, author, serial entrepreneur, on boards of multiple companies.
And what a lot of people know him from is co-authoring and co-creating the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series, and having sold over 500 million books collectively. He and his wife recently launched their latest book, which I'm excited to talk about here, why he's on the show. We're going to talk about it, how it relates to salespeople, business people, and just life in general. Mark Victor Hansen, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you, Jason. I want everyone to learn how to be persuasive. I mean, it's something that intrinsically little kids are. They just know how to ask endlessly. But as we grow up, we get beat up and lose it somehow.
Well, and it's interesting because we'll talk about it in your book. You discuss the 7 roadblocks and we'll talk about that sales. But it's fascinating you mentioned that because, yeah, kids, they always ask. They are relentless and persuasive. And then something shifts over time, right?
Well, when I was 9 years old, I wanted a low handlebar racing bicycle. They were not available in 1957 in America. I'm 73 now. And I relentlessly asked my dad, not understanding that he couldn't afford it. It wasn't that he wasn't trying to be loving and generous and a good dad. So I finally kept asking, and my subconscious read a Boy Scout Life magazine and said you could sell greeting cards and consignment. So I said, wow, I don't have to pay for them. This is a cool idea. So I got him. My mom said, go up to the neighbor, say, you're earning your own bicycle. Would you like to invest in one box of Christmas cards or two? I sold 376 boxes of Christmas cards in 1 month. Not that I wanted to sell Christmas cards, but I became the number one greeting card salesman from Gibson Greeting back in the prehistoric days. And then 40 years later, they fly in their little jet back when I lived in Newport Beach, California, and said, we want to have you guys, you and Dr. Canfield, write greeting cards, which the public doesn't know, but I'm the writer and Jack's a genius Harvard third in his class inside guy. I'm the outside guy. And I wrote all those cards and we were selling 897,000 cards. So it's interesting. 40 years later, the same company comes out and I thought, wow, I mean, this ancestral blessing and all that, you just can't be sure what's going to happen. So if you're going to sell a lot, and if you're going to sell a lot and break quarterly records like you have as a subtitle of your book, then you want to keep selling and keep growing and glowing and seeing how far you can go.
Yeah, I love it. And it's so interesting how things come full circle and kind of things that you did in the past come up and then can be useful or valuable relationships. So the book that you two wrote, which is great, is called Ask, The Bridge from Your Dreams to Your Destiny, which I know you have a copy. I have my copy right here.
Yeah, it comes in every form.
I got the digital one. You've got yours. You've wrote a lot of books, obviously, tons of books. You've gone through this whole process. Why this book and why now?
Well, Crystal and I were traveling literally around the world. We went to 80 countries, talked to over 7 million people, and we find great people that are nice, educated, professional. But the difference between somebody who succeeds a little, Jason, somebody who's vastly successful is one thing only. They know how to ask to get what they want. And like we were saying a minute ago, when little kids, you know, the parents say, quit asking. Do you have any kids?
I do.
How many?
2.
How old are they?
20 and 17.
Oh, so you're past the little beat-up dad and mom.
I remember those days.
Conquer and get what you want. But and we get 6 grandkids, and we love every one of them and cherish them. The point is, little kids, parents, quit asking. You ask too much. Then you go to school and quit asking questions. Just learn what I'm teaching you. And then you go in the military, and the same thing. Just be obedient and salute, and then you go into work. And the point is that everyone needs to replenish asking. And we said, look, most people live below their potential because they've not learned to ask to get to what we're doing is our subtitle, Ask, the Bridge from Your Dreams to Your Destiny. And we're saying, hey, look, everybody's got a glorious, a great, a big, a spectacular destiny, and they're not fulfilling it. And this isn't a dress rehearsal life, right? So when you're done with this physical form, the chili con carne of your body, you're going to look back and go, wow, I could have done all those things if I just asked. The spiritual line, I may be going too far here, but the guy gets to heaven, goes to pearly gates, says, that's your house. He said, well, can't go in. I said, why can't I go in? He said, it's all the things you could have asked for, could have had, but you weren't willing to ask. And you go, what? I ripped myself off. And that's what the principle is in the book. How's that? I've never said that part of it before. I love that story, though.
I think that's so valid. I hear this from so many people, yourself as well, and in the stuff that you've talked about, where it's that regret at the end of life that either people feel and like, I could have done more or I should have done more, or what drives some people, let's say myself, which is the fear of having that regret, which taking action now.
You're here for 2 C's, create and contribute. And obviously I've written 312 books, sold a half billion books, but my goal is really to sell a billion books, and no one's ever done it. And the other day I'm on the podcast with Amazon bestseller late, and the guy started out saying, look, you're the Roger Bannister of books. And I said, that is wonderful. You remember who Roger Bannister was? You look like you're a great athlete and that you're taking good care of yourself.
No, I just looked that. The camera's very slimming. But yes, he's the one who yes, I'll set you up. He was the first person to break the 4-minute mile.
Yeah, and then the next week, you may know 119 people did it, because before that, it was a mental barrier. It had nothing to do with your heart will jump out of your chest if you're running that fast. Now, our family, this is a little crazy aside, but I hope it's interesting. One of my younger brothers lives in Boulder. He owns all the dry cleaners from Boulder to Longmont. Anyhow, we do the Boulder Boulder, which is a long run, but they have the Kenyans run first because they make it look, they've got long length. They run up Mount Kilimanjaro, which I have climbed, and they make it look so easy and effortless. They run and they just float. They are done before I start at the end of the hunt. They're so quick. And the point is they're running the whole thing at almost a 4-minute mile. It's astounding how that's broken through. I hope that's not too much of a crazy aside, but I find it totally interesting. So my whole family does the Boulder Boulder every year as a charity.
I love it. And I think it's that mindset, right? It's about what you think is possible in doing it. And what I'm excited about most is hearing your goal now of selling a billion books. Then you can pave the way for people like myself to then sell a billion books, right? Once you do it.
And by the way, that's exactly it. It's just the same in a business. First, Apple breaks a trillion, and now we got four companies that have broken a trillion. And I suggest to you that down line here, because of technology, some individual is going to be a trillionaire. It'll probably be Jeff Bezos, or I happen to like Elon Musk a whole lot more. I think he's the reigning genius of our time, and we can talk to that. And he's done it all by one thing only, asking. He started as a little kid asking, made $500,000 by the time he was 12 years old. Then he and his brother do a business and make millions. Then he and, I don't know if you know the whole story, but he wrote down when he was at Stanford five things he wanted to do, and he's doing all five of them right now. Because when you ask, figure out what you want, make a decision and a desire and put it in writing, it's spiritual law. It has got to come to pass. Now, you don't have to know how it's going to happen. Like, he didn't know Tesla would be this company, and he didn't know he's going to create a battery that's, according to him, is going to be as little as your thumbnail, but it's going to go a million miles. But, you know, I think you're old enough to remember the iPhone didn't always exist. And yeah, right. You're going to put a chip in there and it's going to take pictures, and I'm going to have unlimited pictures on my phone. Yeah, get out of here, Mr. Jobs. That's what I'm saying, is that we're in the most exciting awakening time in history if you learn how to ask. And we need to study the positive guys that are making, not all the negative people that are trying to crush us. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm most curious about, obviously, this show is for salespeople, sales leaders, business owners, specifically on the authentic persuasion sales side. You talk a lot in the book, and you and your wife talk a lot about the 7 roadblocks. Which ones, or how does that fit into the framework of especially salespeople within their career or with their clients, their own success? How does that fit into what keeps people from asking?
Right. The 7 roadblocks hit all of us at different times in different ways. Some of us have all 7 and going, and because of COVID and the lockdown and the fear, fear is one of them, of course, but the first one is sense of self-worth. Next is fear. Then you got doubt. Then you got excusology. Then you got naivete. You didn't know and you didn't know you didn't know. Then you've got pattern paralysis, where my teacher in graduate school was Buckminster Fuller and his teacher was Albert Einstein. And Einstein always said, if you keep doing what you're doing and expect something new, then you're crazy. Cuckoo is a German term, as you know. And then the last one, number 7, is disconnection, because I watched people travel around the world that live on their iPhone, that we spend too much time in what's called today screen time. And now we unfortunately have to sell with screen time. And it's much better to be, as a salesperson, eyeball to eyeball, belly button to belly button, toenail to toenail, as they say. And I grew up doing that. And I grew up selling my seminars in New York City, which is purportedly the toughest city in the world. Like Frank Sinatra said, if you can sell here, you can sell anywhere. And the joke was they eat their young, right? So, but I love selling and have had great success, knock on wood, other than going bankrupt before I got into the right business. It got me out of what I shouldn't have been doing and into what I should be doing. But that's back in 74, so it's a long time ago.
Any of those roadblocks specifically jump out for salespeople? One of the things that I saw was people who are stubborn and or they have their ego where they think they already know it all or should know it all, and then they don't want to ask or don't want to be open to getting help or receiving help.
All those things you just said are true. And the story we have on worthiness is Bob Proctor. And Bob Proctor came through the Depression. He's now 87, but he's still selling and doing a brilliant job and one of the best guys on YouTube and with a big company. I've owned two companies with Bob, but he had no dad around and his mom was barely surviving. I guess he was born in 1932. I think it's a year. Anyhow, so he never sold. And then all of a sudden he comes out of the Navy in Canada, goes into being a fireman, making $4,000 a year and owes $6,000 and said, this isn't working. These guys get drunk at night and they're not going anywhere. So he goes to the most successful man he knows, who's a salesman, and says, what do I do? I want to be healthy, happy, and rich like you. And he said, read this book, Think and Grow Rich, and you got to keep reading it for the rest of your life. Bob got it, did what it said. Like I said, ask yourself how much money you want. Back then, Bob thought, oh boy, if I get $25,000, I'm a rich man. And remember, we're talking about 1940s or 50s. So Bob started, he looked around and said, oh, somebody told me I can make money cleaning windows. Well, he started cleaning windows so much he exhausts himself because he's a great salesman. And he passes out in the street of Toronto, Canada. I've been to the place where he passed out. Wakes up, there's a policeman, first responder there. And they say, you want us to take you to the hospital? He said, no, I'm just exhausted. Gets home and said, look, if I can't wash every window, I won't wash any. I'll just sell full time. And in 2 years, he started making $1 million a year. Then he had a place there in Toronto, one in Montreal, one in Atlanta, Georgia, and one in London. Because once you learn how to sell, you can sell. I did a whole set of tapes once called Sell Yourself Rich, because that's what I've done. And I want every salesman out there to, the first persuasion, I hope you agree with this, is you got to persuade yourself that you can do it before you can go persuade somebody else. And you got to be convinced so you're convincing. You got to be persuasive so you're persuading. Does that make sense?
It does. That's where, like for me, the authentic persuasion framework is important, because it's that authenticity piece where people understand who they are, what they want, why they're doing it, and then they carry that forward, right?
Exactly. And I persuade myself I could sell seminars even when I didn't know how to give one, and crazy people hired me, and then I started really learning the business and got pretty good at it. Done 7,000 of them around the world, and now I get paid a real lot of money when the public's open. I mean, right before COVID happened, I'd written Ask. We were hired to do one with 11,000 people in Washington, D.C., and one with 15,000 down in Florida. And the guy calls me, I'm sorry to tell you this, but COVID stopped all seminars, and I lost $5 million, and you're fired. I said, oh, thank God I'd save some money so I can get through this. But it was then it was going to be 2 weeks, as you may remember.
And that I do. It was going to be really short, and then here we are.
Yeah.
So for salespeople in particular, right? So there's the mindset piece, there's the persuasive piece you're talking about. And then there's also what's interesting in the book, you're talking about using questions and having that mindset to ask so you can then be persuasive in the sales conversations, like from a tactical standpoint. Can you talk more about that?
Okay, so I'll do my own example and then we'll go distill it. How's that? In 1974, when I went bankrupt, I built the Wall Street Racquet Club Botanical Gardens Aviaries, and I was selling them. I'd been in graduate school with Buckminster Fuller, the guy who invented all of them, and I was trying to be Bucky, which was a colossal mistake on my part. I love him as a teacher and a philosopher and a mentor and a friend, but I was, anyhow, if you ask the wrong question, you get the wrong result. I said, oh my God, what if I go bankrupt? I check a book at a library, how to go bankrupt by yourself. My best, worst experience. For 6 months, I lived in New York, Hicksville, Long Island, New York. I'm sleeping in a sleeping bag in front of another guy's room. And I kept asking myself, what the questions we're teaching and ask is, you got to ask yourself, ask others, and ask God, those three things. And I said, what do I want to do? And I want to talk to people that care about things that matter that would make a life-changing difference and be persuasive. Because one of the really ways to make a lot of money, it's always a faith in ratios. If you can talk to one person, you can get one sale or one non-sale. Or if you talk to 10, you might get 9 out of 10 if you get really good, or 10 out of 10. Anyhow, so I get to my roommates in Hicksville for breakfast and I say, boys, you know anyone who's speaking that's not a lawyer, not a doctor, not a Broadway actor, because we were in Hollywood and New York and some other profession, that's young? And they said, yeah, this guy's speaking to all the realtors. He's a few years older than you, in Hauppauge. And by the way, here's my ticket. It was a miracle. He gave me a ticket. I race out to Hauppauge, Long Island, New York. It's in Suffolk County. Get there, watch this guy mesmerize the audience for 3 hours. At the end of which I go up and I ask him, I said, Chip Collins, who became my good, great friend, I said, would you teach me the business? He said, look, kid, the chance you're making is zero. 1 in 1,000, you'll make it. So go do a real business. Don't try to sell yourself on this one. I said, let me buy you lunch. You just tell me what to do. I'll do it. Anyhow, Tony Robbins and I were talking. I did 1,000 talks a year the first 3 years. Nobody other than the two of us, I know did that, but that's all I had to do is I sold talks, deliver talks, sold talks, deliver talks in four questions. And it was amazing. And then they kept saying, well, yeah, that story in a book. And right here behind me here is a book called Stand Up, Speak Out, and Win. I could pull it off, but you can see it there, the yellow Stand Up, Speak Out. I don't know how this works. There it goes. And they said, I put the story in a book. And I said, this isn't a New York Times bestseller, not a national bestseller, but it's my bestseller. And I want to sign it to you, your wife, your kids, and your dog if you have one, because I think you ought to persuade with humor. And they all laughed. But we sold 20,000 copies. I had little audiences of 5, 6, nobody over 50. And I sold 20,000 copies, made $200,000. That's like making $2 million today in a year. And I went, whoa, man, I've arrived. And since then, written 312 books. So I persuaded myself that I could really do this business.
What have you seen over this long career of sales? Maybe not all the way back to 9-year-old yourself selling greeting cards, but just in the professional realm that's different from dealing with buyers. Like, how has buyers evolved? How has the role of salesperson evolved? What do you see from that? Or what do you have the sense of what's changed over time?
I think we've gone too far, too much technology and not enough high touch. Really, I hope we open this thing up and I hope we get back face to face with people, because I think that's the best way to sell. And I think the person ought to know it and not have to do a PowerPoint every time. And I really love PowerPoints because I just have too much information and a PowerPoint triggers my mind. So obviously I'm a good writer and can crash through typing. I'd say the business is communication. And Plato said it best. He said, whoever controls the narrative or the persuasion controls the world, or controls their world, or controls their business, or controls their sales, or controls their sales force. So you want to have inspired leadership, that the person is on fire about the product and service to sell now and always. I think keeping people away electronically, because you can only do it with email, is really a detriment. And then you say, well, I can sell on the phone and I can do it by text. Ziegler used to teach it well when we did all these seminars together. Selling is thought and feeling transference. A little hard to transfer, unless you're really a spectacular writer, transfer thought and feeling in cold type. And you don't know when they're getting it and what their attitude is, and you can't feel it. Whereas what I loved about selling physically and still do it, and I'm now co-chairman with my wife of a charity that's helped 10.5 million kids get out of abuse and neglect and child trafficking, is childhelp.org, is that when you're with people, and we get to be with a lot of very powerful people, I always ask them, tell me everything about you first, because then you can put it together. You can line it up. And that's what real persuasion is. And my neighbor here is Harvey McKay, who wrote How to Swim with Sharks and Not Get Eaten. But he also wrote, the reason he owns the world's biggest envelope company, McKay Envelope, is what he's got. Gosh, I think it's 166 questions, and you try to know every one of them before you go see your customer, so you can find out where they graduated, what their football player is, or soccer, or whatever the thing is that winds their clock, makes their heart sing, or why they are the best fisher person in the country, or whatever it is. And then you get in sync with them.
I love that. I think that goes against what a lot of salespeople do by default, or what they think a salesperson should do, which is monologuing and lecturing and trying to convince somebody for their reasons, versus what I always teach people is, when in doubt, just ask more questions. Nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And the best way for them to feel like you care is just ask questions and get to know them.
We have a story in our book about exactly that by Preston Weeks. Goes into the biggest behemoth, the biggest metal company in the world is right here in Phoenix, Arizona, by where I live. And they own them, all the copper mines, and they're just gigantic. I mean, we're talking $15 billion a year. And he goes in and wants to sell them some alternative energy products. And he started so wisely saying, well, tell me about yourself. And this woman happened to be that do all the minerals in Africa. And she loved talking, but she only had a half hour, and she spent 45 minutes telling everything about her. And he said, well, tell me how the company works. Tell me what the withholds are. Tell me where you guys are strong and where you're weak and what you need. That's fascinating. They spend an hour and a half with him in this behemoth, which, and the day before, four superstars from a company that does $64 billion a year, that it's got to go on name because I can't besmirch them. I don't want to do that. And these guys just came in and did what you said. We're the best. We got these machines. You need us. I said, I don't think I need you. I'm a behemoth of a company. I don't need anyone, but you're so kind. We're going to work with you. And, you know, it takes three or four more meetings to get in sync. But when you really deal with an individual to individual and find out what makes their heart sing, what makes them tick, and why they're motivated. I mean, she's running a giant company, the biggest copper company in the world, right? Freeport-McMoRan. It's not like you don't go in and go hit her over the head with a sledgehammer. You got to buy from me. And she said, those guys who you know were in here yesterday and we turned them down flat. And I thought, wow, that was fascinating.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. From your take on knowing people so well, psychologically, why did she choose the person who was asking questions versus the other?
She chose Preston because A, he was interested, back to your line, interested in her, interested in the company, interested in knowing what works. How do you get to work with this company? Because he represented a little company. He didn't represent a big company. So as a little company, he got the job. And it's amazing what you can do if you're awake, alive, and enthusiastic and listen with your heart and soul and intuitively find out where the question goes, is what you're suggesting a second ago, Jason.
So I keep going back to the 7 roadblocks that you have, and I'm thinking about people who maybe they're not sure if they can do that, or they don't have that muscle memory, that skill that built up, let's say that curiosity or that empathy or the question asking. What advice would you give, or how can people develop that? Because I think anything can be developed if somebody wants it, but like, how do they get there? And what's that barrier that might be in the way based on what you've found?
Oh, good. Two parts. First of all, the overlay that you're doing in the first part of the sentence and the paragraph was doubt, right? And they're not doubting the customer's got the money. They're doubting their own self-awareness. So what we're talking about here is how you build self-awareness. So let's talk about the other guy we've got. We interviewed 26 superstar askers. The world's highest paid litigator is a guy named Rex Parrish, who also runs a city in California, the only city that works in California right now. I used to live in California, and I like Rex a lot. He's a close friend now. He runs Lancaster, which is above LA, what's called high desert, and they have no crime because he asks. He does nothing but question, but he's a top litigator because he was after one of the energy drink companies. Again, I got to drop the name because he can't talk about it, therefore I can't talk about it, but he won hundreds of millions of dollars because they killed 18 kids because one energy drink is 6 cups of coffee. And these kids go to Vegas and they think, oh boy, I could just chug this, stay awake 3 days, and then I'll catch up my sleep later. All the sleep studies say you can't catch up your sleep. That isn't the way the human body, or it's called biochronology and all that. And I don't want to go into science. I was going to be a doctor of physiology originally. So Rex does this. He's got all these attorneys working for him. He says, I want you to attack me with every question you can possibly think of, and we're going to figure out the answers. And he spends 3 days getting interrogated before he goes into court. He never loses a case because the opponent never has something he hadn't thought about. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And by the way, I'm answering in an obtuse way maybe. And if it's too obtuse, let's go deeper on it. But what happens is he becomes invincible because he's been interrogated by, he's got really good attorneys there in Lancaster where his office is. And I've watched him, and it just, they beat him up. They pulverize him. They try to chew him up, spit him out, and make them fail, right? If you fail in simulation, and by the way, I was on the board of the biggest airline, and our pilots, like all pilots, if you fail on the simulator, you get fired instantly. And when the pilots come out of our simulators, right, Evergreen Airlines, the world's biggest airline, we did all the UPS planes were ours, painted brown and all that. So you can see how big this airline was that I'm on board of, was on a board of. Anyhow, they try to crash the plane in simulation. So in real life, they can't crash it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
These guys come out sweat is, and I used to be a little bitty pilot, but nothing compared to these guys. These are military pilots, and the guys who fly our commercial airlines, the private airlines in America are the best in the world. But they've been, every 6 months, they got to weigh in and they can't get fat. They got to be healthy. Same thing with what I'm saying about Rex Paris. He does the questions that are good. Now, let's just do the other side that he does. The reason this city has no crime. You say, well, the city can't have any crime. Well, he does everything right. He's got the whole place lit up. He's got the whole place running solar. But he goes up to all the, what are called gangbangers, the bad guys. And he comes with two giant policemen and says, here's the way it works. You're either going to go into 12 hours a day for the next 2 weeks of transformational thinking so you stop being a gangbanger, or you go to jail for the next 3 years because of what you've done and I've got your records here, or you leave town and you never come back because we've got photo cells on the thing. Which one of those three do you want? And the guy's going, I don't want to go to jail. So most of them leave town. Isn't that interesting? And don't come back because Rex says, we got your picture. You come back. It's adios, sayonara, and goodbye. Are these stories helpful to you? They're all in our book, Ask the Bridge from Dreams to Your Destiny, because most people don't get the privilege, and forgive me for saying it, of seeing what superstar askers did to get to where they got.
I think it's super helpful because the thing that's jumping out when you're talking about Rex is the role playing and practicing in sales for all those scenarios that people could throw at you until it becomes so automatic that in the heat of battle, right? Like the flight simulator example, when everything's hitting the fan, right? Your prospect is trying to wriggle off the hook, if you will. You know what to do and it's instinctual as possible.
The other thing about the simulation, back when I did all the sales training in the insurance business, and Bob Proctor and I did a lot of it together with State Farm as one of our clients, and we took them up 10 to 20% a year. And what we do is, let's say we got 500 salesmen, and most of them at the time, they were selling one product, which is a product you got to have. You got to have home insurance, you got to have car insurance, but they hated selling life insurance. So what we did is, if there are 500 in a room, we had them all ask, Jason, would you like to buy life insurance? And say no.
No.
Okay. And then you just go to the next one and they all had to do 500 times. Once you've heard no 500 times to a product that you've got to sell, because if you don't sell 11 life policies a year, you don't get to stay with State Farm and you lose your 15,000 car insurance, meaning you're making $4 or $5 million a year. So what happens is that by the time they did 500, they were no longer, oh my God, Jason doesn't love me. I'm rejected. I'm going to go kill myself. I understand that sounds morbid and all that, but the fact of the matter is most of us are fearful of rejection. That's why I teach in the book that you got to have one clean four-letter word, N-E-X-T. So when you say no, I just say next, because there's somebody out there that'll buy whatever you're selling. And today we got 8 billion people on the planet. A lot of people want to buy what you're selling, but you might not be hitting the right demographic. You may not be hitting the right time. Right offer, whatever. I mean, the five parts to a sales process, right?
Well, and the part that I think about when you say it is how our primal brain from long time ago, we survived as a group, as a tribe, right? Like nobody's surviving as a Homo sapien back in the day in a cave by themselves for very long. And so I still think our outside world has evolved way faster than the primal parts of our brain, where the primal part of our brain still thinks, like, if somebody says no, or I do public speaking and someone laughs at me, I'll get kicked out of the tribe of humans and be left to die in the wilderness alone.
It's fascinating you bring that up, because we had an inner circle and we charged people $25,000 to go on these exotic trips. And we all climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, which is not an easy climb, but we also got to the biggest orphanage in the world in Kenya. But more important to your thing, we went to the Masai Mara warriors, where the guys all wear red. And these guys are still living 2,000 years out of sync with where you and I live. These guys have all got scratches because at 13, you've got to kill a lion. You think rejection in somebody saying no hurts? It's like I heard Warren Buffett say one time, Bill Gates and I had to go kill a lion. Lion wins. Bill Gates and Warren are zero. And that's the difference here, because what you just said is correct. I hope I'm not over expanding this euphemistically, but we do get afraid. We do think, hey, the lion's going to get me. and the adrenaline runs and all that, and you start to sweat. And what happens is the minute you start to sweat in front of the client, and you see it more in women than men, but the neck gets all red. They go, I got rid of this dumbass salesperson who came here and thought he could sell me. I'm Mr. Big or Miss Big, or I know more than they do. No, bunk. That's why you got to simulate this thing. And I've never done this. I can hardly wait to listen to what we're saying, because it just, at least to my mind, what we're saying is an original iteration of it.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a few years as a civilian working with the military. And one of the things I saw and learned from that culture and that group was practice like you fight. I mean, it's not practicing with fake ammunition so that it's automatic when you get out there and that you understand it and you're not afraid because you're prepared, which I think is missing a lot in salespeople, because sales is one of the few things I see that has unlimited upside, the potential to be a professional, but no time that's expected to be spent practicing versus sports, right? Football, you see 3 hours on the field every week. That's 5% of their life. Well, otherwise, they're practicing, they're preparing, they're getting ready, they're working on all their skills to then do the thing. In sales, you practice on the field for a lot of people.
And it's too tough. I mean, let's just take the greatest athletes, because that's the model that you use. And let's just do Michael Jordan. He got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and Kobe Bryant, when he was alive, and my neighbor, he got up at 4 in the morning and practiced before the coach got there, before anyone got there, because whatever you do in practice, you're going to do in life. And then back to the military example, only because we've done all these podcasts have I met the world's greatest SEALs, the guys who lived through Benghazi and that, and they've all written books. That's why they want me on, so I could teach them about some more books, which I'm honored to do. And I salute all these guys, because these guys have bravery that just ekes. And what a salesperson's got to do is be brave, because what you said is correct. Sales is the highest paid hard work and the lowest paid easy work in the world. Everyone says, well, books must just fall out of your brain. No, I get up in the middle of the night with ideas that I write, and we work, and we spend a lot of weekends writing books, and they didn't fall out of my brain. Well, they did, actually. But the fact is that I love doing it, because I believe you and I and everybody are here for two reasons: create and contribute. And happiness is when you're productive. When a salesperson goes to the movie theater during the day and says, boss, I called on 10 people, they all said, now get out of here. Tell me exactly who they were, and I'm going to call them up. And when you start to confront them with that, their persuasion level goes, suddenly they turn red, sweat comes on their lip, and you go, oh, you weren't telling the truth. I want salespeople to tell the truth. I want them to be authentic. I want them to be passionately persuasive, and that's why they got to be selling something they 100% believe in. I mean, look, I was illiterate as a little kid. I mean, my parents were Danish immigrants, and my dad came at 14 coming out of Hitler's Germany, and there's no ESL. English is a second language. I don't mean to overdo this, but from first grade to sixth grade, I was in remedial reading because they thought I was not smart. And now I'm world's best-selling author, and I'm very thankful to that little lady. And I got criticized for having to go to the dumb class, they said. But the fact of the matter is, it couldn't have been better, because look at what I've been able to pull off. So I am very thankful. That's why we've got to make all of us rejection proof. Simulation, I think what you just said is the only way, Jason. And if you had another way, I want to hear it. I'm open. I'm here to learn. I'm not here to be on Mount Olympus talking down to salespeople who haven't. I've made a lot of money, and I'm very thankful in all the businesses I've done.
Well, I think what you said is so important about that fear part and the worry about rejection and tying that in. And then the 7 roadblocks that relate to each person, maybe different points of their life, different scenarios, different situations. For leaders out there, specifically always thinking about sales and operational leaders, but leaders and business owners, what should they take from your book and the lessons that you have for asking, getting what they want from above, and then having a team that they're leading?
A couple answers all at once. Number one is I'd like them not to buy one book, but three. One for them, and if they're going to have a sales team, one for everybody in the sales team. But what we've discovered, having done now, this is the 121st podcast I've done since April 28th when the book came out. The people that are reading it and going it over with their spouse question by question, sort of like Rex Paris, or going it over with their sales team, and Rex did it with his whole sales team. Every one of his lawyer attackers have all had to go through the questions with him, which is phenomenal. So with your mastermind partner, with your business partner, with your best client, with your church group, your temple group, whatever. What happens is it evolves them, because right now we've been in this COVID. our corporate symbol is a butterfly, and we start as a caterpillar, but you can't look up a caterpillar and predict butterfly, right? And we've been in this lockdown for almost a year, most of us, at one level or another. It makes people despondent, disconsolate, and depressed. What I'm saying is you got to open up. So I'd ask them to get the three books for the two of them and then one give to the library, because libraries are saying 16,000 libraries have been closed and they haven't got any money or cash flow or people helping them, so they can't even afford our books. And I say, will you help? Well, I haven't got enough money that I can give 16,000 books on libraries on limited books. And then the other thing is what you said about on high. This is really good, because what we're teaching in the book is you got to figure out what you want and ask. Number two, you got to put it in writing. That's mandate. That's these aren't mine. Three, you got to visualize, realize that this is where you go to sleep at night and you close your other eyes and push back sleep and you visualize what you want the next day. And when I was bankrupt and upside down, I read a book called The Magic of Believing by Claude Bristol. This is a sidebar, but read self-help action books rather than watch the news. Shut off the news. Read my stuff. That's the zone I write in. But like Claude's book said, whatever you want to do, write down how much you want to earn and then repeat it a couple hundred times before you go to sleep. We now say, back then I wanted to earn 100 grand a year. That would be like a million today, like I said. And $400 a day, 250 work days, that gives you all the holidays. That equals 100,000. If you want to earn a million a year, it's $4,000 every work day times 250 days is a million a year. The world's top salesman, Ben Feldman, said, if your kid's life depended on it, could you make 4,000 tomorrow? I said, of course I would. And then I started doing that. So I changed my picture with one sales question, right? The point is, I went to bed that night and I said, okay, God, show me where 400 is, 400 is. God, show me where 400 is, 400, 400. Hmm. At 2:58 in the morning, my little digital clock went click, click. And I woke up and I was totally awake. And my mind is saying a name that I never heard. And I knew that I had to write it down. It said, Bill Widener, State Mutual. Now, I'm the only one selling my seminars. Remember, I'm a nobody. I got no staff. It's Mark against the world selling seminars just in a life insurance business at the time, which is sort of a bottomless pit for motivation. That guy Chip Collins had told me. I'm on cold calling. I'd done a seminar at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm in a metropolitan building where I'm spending time. Never heard of a company called State Mutual or Bill Widener. I go in there and it's at Bill Widener State Mutual. And I go, holy cow. Now, why does that work? Because infinite intelligence knows everything. And God's a mainframe computer. You and I are many frames off the mainframe, or if you want to do it secularly, conscious, subconscious, superconscious. I don't care how you all want to do it or call it or what name you want to put on it. But I go in this office. Nobody's at the front desk. I go straight back to this guy's office. He thinks I'm coming to learn how to sell insurance and become one of his agents, right? I need a job. I do my four little sales questions, the last of which, do you want to cut this check, Bill, or have your secretary cut it? He said, I'm a big boy. I can cut it myself. I said, good, then I'll take it. He said, I left there within 5 minutes with $400. He said, he was so happy to give it to me. He said, I didn't know if you were going to come back and teach us four seminars on prospecting, presenting, closing, and good time habits or not. But you just seemed so good that I just had to do it. And that's what I'm saying is most salespeople and sales managers need to go to the higher, out of your little sense of self into your higher sense of self to get out of the ego land into the self-confident land, right, where you can accomplish miracles. Then I started making more and more, and I just kept raising the number. And it's the same thing we did. We're teaching that if you don't know your destiny, you say 400 times before you go to sleep, and I, God, what's your destiny for me? And it'll come up. But you've got to tell your sweetiekins, hey, I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night. If Mark's telling the truth, I'm going to have to write it down. I'm going to have to turn on the light. I've got to write it down in detail. I know it sounds whacked, but somehow the guy's made himself pretty successful. So I'm going to assume that he has technology and thought forms I don't have yet.
Yep. Definitely good advice. And I love the disclaimer too about letting your partner or significant other know what madness you might be up to in the middle of the night when the thought does come to you. And I really like that idea that you said, like if your child's life was on the line and you had to come up with $4,000 tomorrow, could you do it? Right. I use something similar when talking about price, but thinking about it from a salesperson's perspective. Okay. If that's the case, what urgency do I have? How does that become bigger than my fears and my limitations and my doubts? So that
and because we're talking about persuading yourself. When Bob and I got $1 million to write 1 Minute Millionaire, which we said there's a million ways to make a million. There's one right, perfect, easy, acceptable way to anyone. We had to figure out how to sell a million books faster than anybody ever done it. And we didn't know how to do it. So what we did is we did the 10X principle, which is at Google and Grant Cardone and all that. And we said, well, what if we had to sell 10 million books? Well, now a million looks easy. And so what we did is we called up and got with Ancestry.com. This is before a spam happened. And Paul Allen, who's now dealing with me again, not Paul Allen, Bill Gates, but Paul Allen, creator of Ancestry.com, who made $1 billion for himself. And we sent out emails, 300, and said, look, if you'll buy this book, 1 Minute Millionaire, and Amazon was from 6 o'clock in the morning to 11 at night. And my partner, Bob Allen, had written a book called Challenge. And he said, send me to an unemployment line. I'll get everybody making $5,000 a month, no matter what. Send me to any city. Give me $100. I'll buy $1 million worth of real estate. So Bob and I had watched Jeff Bezos when he was beginning say, yeah, you can't sell more books than I can deliver. And I leaned over to Bob at his house. I said, Bobby, I think he challenged us. Shouldn't we melt him? And he said, yeah. And so to sell all those books that first day, what we did is we sent out 3 million emails, and it came out October 17th, 2001. So it's 20 years ago now, basically. We said, if you buy the book, we get $250 worth of electronic stuff from Mark and $250 worth of electronic stuff from Bob. You got to buy it from 6 a.m. to 11. Well, we came out at 79,000, went up to 705, at which time Amazon melted down. Within an hour, Bezos called us up and said, I'll send you guys free tickets, first class. Get your butt up here. Tell me how you did that. Because I said nobody could do it. I said, you didn't think we're smarter than you did. Because what we're talking about is you got to be smart. But you got to be more than smart. I'm saying you got to be wise. You got to do something different than anybody else. Nobody at all else had ever said, I'm going to melt down Amazon. Well, at least now a couple of people have tried it because we did it. And now it's a little tougher, I think, because he's more set up because he had us teach him. Because you want to be unique. And so we did something that nobody had ever done. And that makes life fun and adventurous. And nobody got hurt. Everybody ultimately got their books. Amazon figured out how to deliver them. Random House figured out how to print them. And we got a lot of money as a result. And we're very, very thankful. And now the book sold, I guess, 3.6 million. Curiously, it's number one in Vietnam. And I've been there twice in the last 2 years with my wife until COVID, where they pay $75,000 to have me talk in Ho Chi Minh, and you and I would call it Saigon. And anyhow, they've changed the names to protect the country, I guess.
Well, and as you're talking about that, and especially if I'm thinking about sales, business people, all of us and myself as well, goes back to the Elon Musk, which goes back to the Roger Bannister, which is the self-limiting, like it's never been done. Maybe it's not possible. And then it just takes somebody to believe that. And each of us have that capacity to go, well, maybe it's not been done before, but I could do
it. Talk about Elon Musk, just one point, because you're a Californian. I used to live there. The governor says, you're going to shut down. I think it's Fremont or Freeport, whatever it is, the city. Yep. And he said, okay. But he said, wow, what does the government need? Well, the government needed respirators, and 3M couldn't make them fast enough. So he calls up the chairman of 3M and he asks him, he said, you need to make this many respirators and you guys say you can't do it. I've got the metal. I've got the 3D printing. I've got the labor force, and I get to open up if you do it. Well, he opened up, but he also made 90,000 cars and became the richest man in the world. So when you learn how to sell, you overcome problems. And I define an entrepreneur as somebody who finds a problem, fixes it, scales it, and then makes a vast profit. To him who much is given, much is required, Jesus said. So you and I are obligated to make a whole lot of money and then be excessively philanthropic. And I sell more books than anybody because we tithe in every book I've ever written. And so it works, right? Principle's principle. You either know principle or you don't. I don't believe that principle. Well, go try it and see if you don't get rich rewards.
I love it. What would be your definition of authenticity?
To say what you're going to do and then go do it. I've never been asked that before, so I hope that's an acceptable definition.
There's no right or wrong on this show.
Okay. Well, and then add one other word, if you do it with integrity, because integrity means your tension and integrity always and only coexists, and it's structural. The world operates on integrity. Universe stays together on integrity. Our body stays together on integrity. So if we're integrous in our sales process, you'll get to stay with the same clients. And let me just give that example, because we got young newbies out there that aren't going to believe what I say next. But when I was doing all the talks for Century 21, the guy that hired me was at 29 regions. I did all of them, had a great time. I loved those ladies and guys. But the guy who hired me all the time was a guy named Don Hobbs. Don Hobbs now runs another big company, and they just bought Success Magazine the last few days. He calls me back, and we haven't worked for 40 years. And he said, I need you again. And I go, I like to be needed. It is so nice. I've been for 40 years. No, I didn't. The point is, I never violated him. I always did what I said. I delivered the best product I could. I came out of excellence, which is authenticity has to be delivered with excellence. How's that?
I love it. That's awesome. What is your definition of success?
a multiplicity of them, and I've read hundreds of them, but success for me is the fulfillment of your destiny, which is the subtitle of our book, because everyone is coded, Crystal, I believe, at birth, Jason, with a destiny. Now, if you shut down your asking mechanisms and what you said, your curiosity, you squish your destiny, and that's why the people at the end regret. I will have no regrets because I've been everywhere, done everything, been lavishly well-treated by my clients, and I love them. And like I just told you guys, like Don Hobbs still love me and say, hey, I need you again. And I go, good, good, good. Luckily, I've had a lot of business in between.
That's awesome. So that's
accepted. I think everyone's here to fulfill their desire by creating and contributing.
Well, and creating, contributing in alignment with that destiny and integrity, bundle those up.
Yep.
Sounds like a great definition. So talk about the book. Where's the best place to get it?
Okay, so two things. One is you can get it on Amazon everywhere. If your bookstore exists by you, go there, please. I want to keep the bookstores alive. But otherwise, go to Amazon and get a copy of Ask, The Bridge from Your Dreams to Your Destiny. And then we've got a little website called askthebookclub.com. We're having a free book club meeting where we're going to teach people to be asked, become master askers, and it'll be fulfillment, and you'll love it. And it's literally people now around the world joining us. Otherwise, go to markvictorhansen.com. And if you do, we want you to put your name in and get a bunch of free good stuff from us. And the most listened to tape in the world has been listened to by 200. Wow, can't even believe it. 200 million people. Holy cow. One of the tapes we got called The Strangest Secret. I redid what Earl Nightingale did 50 years ago for Nightingale Conan. And he did it, and then he died. We were good friends, but the company called up and said, would you redo it? And I go, I get to redo the most listened to tape in the world.
Wow. Yeah,
we doubled it. So it was 100 million. And I got it 200 million. I mean, not because I'm so famous. It just, it is one of those, Earl made it for his sales force. The sales force became successful. They started giving it out to their clients, which is what a lot of your people are going to do. They're going to read Ask and give it to their best clients and their best friends. And it's the same. It's called pass along in books. You know that feeling. And then that's what made Chicken Soup work. People would read and go, you're going to read this story, mom or dad or little uncle or teacher, priest, minister, rabbi, whatever. And it worked. So we're very, very thankful.
I love it. Well, Mark, thanks for coming on the show and sharing all this and for all the stuff you're doing and for helping people ask and live their destiny. I appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. Hope you'll have my wife separately for me on the show.
Yes, we'll definitely do that. Thanks again for coming. And that's it for this conversation about authentic persuasion. I'll catch everyone on the next episode. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.